What wreck did you not tell me about?
Well, it was the one that got lost the time that I come down.
Oh, they're not on record. What was it carrying?
Well, it was light, and he was coming up the bay the night that I was coming down from 10 Mile Creek, and there come a big storm, and I guess he saw me coming in here and thought I was going in Dipper Harbor, or heard me. It was just a dungeon, dark. And anyway, I come in, I got in the creek all right without getting lost.
Did you?
The next morning, this other one was ashore over there on Thumbcap. All gone, tore to pieces.
What about the man?
Well, they only found one man there at Thumbcap afterward, the dead man.
His body?
Yeah.
How many would be aboard?
Well, there wouldn't be over two.
Well.
But there was a woman's suitcase full of women's clothes in it. We thought he might have had a woman passenger with him.
But her body wasn't found?
Nobody ever knew anything about. All they found was this one man at Thumbcap and a dog.
Yes. And where had it come from?
Well, it carried coal up and down the bay here from Joggins down to Point Le Prone, down to Grand Manan, everywhere. It was a kind of a coal carrier.
Was it? And do you remember about the one on Port Ledge? That Mr. Kane was captain of?
I forgot about it.
On Pork Ledge?
Pork Ledge. I knew the one about with the fellow that got, the schooner got lost on Pork Ledge, and they found the man inside the ledge, old Wilson Winnie over here, an old man, and he had a vision. He saw this man down in the hole in the rock, way down below low water mark. So he kept at Jersey and them so much that they had to go up and to satisfy him to grapple. And sure enough, when they got there and they grappled up this man, but he had seen it there from home.
Is that right? Had like dreamed it, or had he dreamed it, or just seen it? He just
in his mind.
That's strange.
The reason I remember so well, Jarvey come over here to get the grapple from Father and everything, and they were just laughing from going up there to grapple just to satisfy the old man.
And they found the body?
Yeah.
Whose body was it, did you know?
Well, it was somebody lived down around St. Andrews. Little old schooner that was going down there, and she was lost. The reason she was lost, they had a big hogs of the molasses on the deck, they said, and it had got rolling around and tore the side out of the schooner.
Is that right?
But Father and Uncle Dave come down the same day ahead of them, and they had an awful rough day.
Yes. What were the worst winds, what direction?
The worst wind around here is southeast.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, southerly to southeast.
Have many men lost their boats over the years, fishermen?
Not very many right around here. There's quite a lot of Chance Harbor boats lost over the other side where they had the breakwater there.
Yeah. When did they build the breakwater?
Well, they built the first one. I was about 16 years old, so it must have been about 1900.
Exactly. It seems to me that one of the Boyles gave some land for the breakwater.
Mm-hmm.
Some of Peter Boyle's people gave some land for the breakwater.
Well, they sold the land.
Well, yes. Well,
Jim Boyle owned that big field
up
here.
Yeah.
They sold a strip down for right away down to the breakwater. And I was there. The first log that they put there in the old breakwater.
Is that right?
And I piled the load of logs in, the first load that come to build the old breakwater.
Did you?
For the name of Trainer down to Beaver Harbor, had this little old gold finder schooner.
Yeah.
Wood boat. And he brought a load of lumber up and he had a flag in his rigging out there, and I was only young for a paddling around the boat, and Wallace Belding told me that's what I wanted to pilot. Of course, I knew the shore as good as anyone, so I went, sailed away out to them and piloted them up in Chance Harbor. They didn't have any engines or anything then. They just go by sail.
Yes.
I remember I piloted him, you know, I thought I'd done a great job, and when I left, he gave me $2, and then that added to
it. Added to the pleasure.
Yeah.
What kind of sailboats? Were they schooners or four-masters or square riggers?
Those were the two-masters, sure, what they called a wood boat. And four-masters right at the stem, right at the very bow. They were made for carrying lumber up and down St. John River, mostly. The Goldfinder was about the last one that was around.
Is that right? And who owned it?
Well, some fellow owned it to come here, and Jim O'Donnell bought it from him, and then the trainer down there got it from him again.
Yeah. And your father had a schooner, didn't he?
Yes, he had to. He had two, him and his brother, Uncle Dave, they owned the Emma little schooner. Well, then father sold his share out and bought the Seaflower. She was over here. He had her for, I guess, 50 years.
Yeah.
The keel is over there on the beach, yeah.
Is that? Well, that's interesting. I must look at it someday.
Well, it's right, it's just the other side of where you go to the graveyard. The point of land that goes out the furthest towards the creek. But there's just a long keel there now, and the mud and some old timbers fastened to it.
Yes. Was it built here?
Built on St. Andrews. I remember when Father bought her from the Solar Pearl, he had a goatee, and I just sat at his feet. I was only about 3 or 4 years old. I just sat looking at this goatee.
Now, your father wore a beard, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
He always wore it. Yeah. Uncle Dave always wore a goatee.
Did he? Yes.
And a mustache. Yeah.
Did your father come here directly from Ireland?
No, he was born here.
Your father was born here?
Yeah. You see, father's mother was a Belding. She was one of the oldest Belding girls. And father's father came here direct from Ireland.
He did.
Came over to St. John, and he knew somebody down in Maine somewhere, and he started to walk down there. Of course, there's just a little narrow road, and when they got to Mahogany, the fellows that, what was the name of the fellows there, the Manchesters, had the oldest house there, and he hired old Grandfather Thompson for a month to work with him on the farm. Well, then when he got down here at the turn, he changed his mind and come down here. Now went and got married to one of the...
one of the Belding girls.
There were 7 of them to choose from, though.
My! Yes, and it seems that each girl that got married was given a piece of land, was she not?
Yes, well, most of them.
Yes, because Hargrove got a piece of land, didn't he?
Yeah, and the land over there that Harley bought from me, that belonged to Aunt Emily. She was Emily Belding one time, Emily Bartlow, the last of them.
I see.
And then there was the fellows from out in Muskworth out of Graham's. Not Graham's, but I forget their name. They owned a piece of land, Hebron's.
Hebron's, oh yes, yes.
You know,
I've heard the name, yes.
But then old Grandfather Belding himself owned the next lot to it.
Yes.
The two Belding, they were in the English Navy, you know. I guess they were quite well up, but they had a boat of these, a ship of these, and over here fighting Americans. And I guess that was in the War of the Revolution, when Americans broke loose in England. They were fighting them, and they started for home, and they never heard of them again. Never heard of the ship or what happened to them or anything. They kind of imagined that they'd run into an American ship somewhere and both had got sunk.
Is that right? So their father settled the land?
Well, they give the land to their father. Well, then he divides it up amongst his girls. 100 acres or 200 to some.
Yes.
It was 800 acres square of land.
Oh, it was 800 acres?
Yeah.
What's that? That was quite a lot of land.
Oh, yeah, that's about all Chance Harbor. Well, the land was measured from over there at the road. All this down around here was thrown in because it was the tide come up around it.
Yes. And did people start fishing right away as soon as they settled here?
Well, they all fished as a rule, but they depended on everything. Shooting ducks for meat, and picking berries in the summer, and picking dulls, and always at something like that.
Yeah. You know?
And then they trawled, they hand lined mostly. Over here, he went out hand line and he went to throw the big, using the hand line lay in the big weight, and he went to throw it out and the hook caught in his hand and hauled away in over the top of the beard. So he had to row in from way out there, and he rowed into his own place and he walked around to come over here to old Grandfather Belton. And when they got here, the tide was in the creek. So he swam the creek with his big, and he had this big hand line laid still tied to his arm, but he hadn't sense enough to cut it off. Swam the creek with his big hand line laid.
Well, and then they all worked towards having schools to educate their children, didn't they? They wanted a school built.
Yeah, they had a school up here. Oh, something, Garner's house, this down this side of it. You remember the old school?
No, it was gone when I came.
You remember the Cedar Spring?
Yes.
It was right alongside the schoolhouse.
Was it?
Just the other side was the schoolhouse. The road went in around that way.
Who owns that land now? Who owns the Cedar Spring?
Well, Dave Thompson did own it. Bertie, I suppose, owns it now, unless he sold it. Well, I don't know. The land, the old Grandfather Belton left it to his daughters, but when the daughters got married, and the husbands got the land.
Well, that seems fair enough.
Except
it must have been a dowry.
My land, Aunt Emily Partlow owned it. That thing ain't gold, is it? Oh, it ain't recording our voices.
Yes.
Me stuttering away.
No, well, I am too. When I write off it, I'll just, when I write it down, it'll just be the words that I want.
Yeah.
So it's easier than trying to take notes because you lose your chain of thought.
Yes.
Well,
I didn't know that we were tuned in.
Oh, you didn't? Well, another story I want to hear again is the one about this captain that landed out here.
Oh, the airplane.
Yes.
Yeah, well, of course, everyone in old time knew who he was. He was a big explorer up north, he was the biggest American explorer they had.
And what was his name?
Oh, son up there.
Charles... Did you call him Roachville or Rockville?
No, that's the third with him.
Oh, McMillan. Donald McMillan?
McMillan, that's the name.
Yes.
Yeah, he was the big American explorer up north, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of Perry, the discovered the North Pole. Well, Mick Milne was just in line with him. All right. Knew everything about up north there, the same as at home.
Yes. And how did it come he was heading down this way?
Well, they started to fly home from up in Labrador, and they had to, like, I think they were kind of at outs with the Canadian government or something about the customs.
Yes.
And he didn't want to go in St. John. He lit off St. John when he saw the customs boat come. They took off again. and come an awful big storm, and he got down here and he had to light here.
Yes.
And so I went out in my boat and got him, towed him into the creek there. And then he stayed here all night. First thing you want to know, he said, is there any government official, any customs official around? And I said, yes, the one lives next door. Oh, yeah. Oh, I said, he wouldn't say anything to you. I said, don't pay any attention to that. I knew Uncle Dave didn't interfere in anything like that, you know. He told us yarns all night. Jim was just little on this dear old trouble. He told Jim all the airplane yarns.
Yes. And they stayed all night?
They stayed all night. The next morning they flew round and round over there on the water to the seaplane.
Yes.
Two boats on it. Yes. They flew round and round there and couldn't get to go, couldn't take off there, wasn't big enough, so he went away around to Chance Harbor, and then he come down against the wind. When he come down over here, he circled around over Ross River all a while, and they were waving at us going by.
It must have been quite a sight.
Oh, there were about 25 people over on Crow Island watching them.
And what year was that?
Oh,
it doesn't say.
Jim was about 6 years old, so it must have been about, come around about 63 years ago.
Well.
I'm just guessing.
Approximate. Well, yeah, that's close enough. Approximate seems to be a good measure.
Oh, he was an awful nice fellow. I told us all about the Eskimos, what they did and everything, what they ate.
And they would eat their food while they spent their time in the north, would they?
They had their own food. Although they ate mostly fish that the Eskimos bought. They got lots of salmon, they said. But they said they didn't eat any of the seal blubber.
It sounds pretty awful, but if you was hungry, you might have to eat it.
He said there were terrible falls for bugs on their clothes.
Were they?
Everyone that was there nearly.
Well, I don't know how they could survive that.
Well, he said the Eskimos just thought not of that anymore than they did if mosquitoes wasn't around.
Did they not?
No.
Well, I guess people that live in some of the, like Okinawa and places, they have insects and things.
Oh, I guess something terrible around the Philippines.
Yes.
I don't think around the Indian down there that they pay much attention to any. They don't kill stuff like that, do they?
I don't think
against
so.
Against their rules to kill anything.
Yes, some of them, they walk with a stick sweeping the insects off so they don't step on them.
Yeah. Well, they say if a cow or a horse or anything gets sick and they're just laying around the road dying, they won't kill them.
No. They're sacred or something.
Against the rules.
Yeah.
I don't know, they take enough lives other ways.
Yes.
Daniel, you're in my angle down there, ain't it?
Yes, it is. Harbor over the years.
The biggest change.
Yeah.
Oh, cars made the boats change.
Yeah, it took people out of the villages.
Yeah,
and
because people would only go where they walked, or an odd few that had horses.
Yes.
But everything that, for me, I think I must have been 16 or 17 years old before I was ever in Mason's Bay. I used to be in Dipper Harbor every two or three times a week, but Mason's Bay was just a little bit too far to walk.
Yes, and you walked to Dipper.
Yeah.
Yes.
We used to go down there to church every Sunday nearly, and all go down to there back and forth.
Yes.
Uncle Rob lived down the road there, and he used to go down, Gordon and Harold and Warren, all them.
Yes.
Well, we'd go down to be a regular gang of us, about 10 or 12.
Did the minister live on the field at that time?
Yes. He generally had a house to live in, but when the young ministers came around, they boarded generally.
Yes. All the women with eligible daughters wanted them, I suppose, Al.
Oh, I don't know. They didn't stay here very long, like a month or two. But one of us stayed at Uncle Dave's, but he used to borrow Lynn's bicycle to go over the field.
Did he?
Just have it all summer. And when he's ready to go to college, he brought the bicycle back. Oh, it was pretty well rim-racked. And he told Lynn, this old wheel's given me a lot of trouble this summer, but I got her back without her being all together. Great satisfaction to Lynn.
Yes. That's pretty good. Well, Al, could fishing support people, or did they have to work at other work too? Like you sold boat engines. Was it to make more money, or could you have lived on fishing alone?
Well, you lived, you got food and stuff, but you always,
what?
You know, stuff you sold, you got a little bit of money to have a little cash on hand.
Yes.
And I don't know, when young folks then, when they got money, they put it in the bank. I remember I had a little old tin bank, and if I got a cent, the money went in that.
Yes.
Learned to be kind of a miser. And after I got up to about 50 cents, then Father had put it in the bank for me.
Yes. Well, that was
the Dominion Government Bank there, and you don't remember, and it used to be, I remember yet the old man, he had a kind of a gray coat, and half the side was torn out and hanging down that way for all the years that I ever remember. That was his banking suit.
It was?
He had that hanging up in the bank, and when they come there, he put that on to protect his good clothes.
Yes. Well, it's children today have a different value system. If they had 50 cents today, that would mean a bottle of pop and a bag of chips.
Oh, yeah. Oh, whatever money you made then, you saved generally. There wasn't any chance to spend it. You see, there was one of those stores around, or grocery stores or something. What little you bought for candy or something like that didn't amount to much.
No. Did they tell me that Mr. Devine, they called him Squire Devine, used to hold court in Dipper Harbor in the old Anderson house? You remember that?
Oh, I remember him being kind of a judge or whatever
they call it.
Yes, a
judge is what they called him.
I never knew the old man. I knew Peter and Henry and them.
Yes.
The girls. George Thompson's wife was a divine, you
know. That's right, she was. No, Divine married George Thompson's sister.
Yeah.
Peter Devine, didn't he? Or was?
Yes, that was George Thompson's sister, I guess.
Yes. Yes.
Maggie, wasn't it her name?
I think it was.
I remember at the time they thought that the two religions wouldn't work good together.
But they managed all right.
They got along good all right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, did she go to his church, or did she?
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just like the old timers, like Jarvie and them, used to tell us yarns about things that happened. Half of it was just what he had made up, I suppose.
Well, I don't know, because you remember some of it, and there's enough written about what happened in those days that you can piece it all together, and it turns out pretty good.
Well, there's an awful lot of difference in the place. Now, the women used to go burying to get a little bit of money, for spending money, you know. And they all went barefooted away out to the coal mine. Old Aunt Mary Belden and Mandy and Aunt Drusilla and Mother, all she insisted she'd wear shoes when she went.
Yeah.
But they'd go way out there in their bare feet and all over that rubble, you know, where the place was burned. I don't know how they ever stood it. Pick berries all day and sell them out there and then walk home again.
Now, were they married women at that time?
Oh, yeah.
They were.
Yeah, their families would be with them.
Yes. Well, Graham told me that Grandpa Belding was 14 years old before they ever bought him a pair of shoes.
Yes, I dare say. Well, in my time, we never thought of wearing shoes in the summer until Sunday.
Yeah.
You weren't supposed to go to Sunday school with your bare feet.
Oh.
But just as soon as the snow got off the ground, it was an awful fight to get in your bare feet. We liked to go in our bare feet.
Yes.
Jim Diner and Harold and Gordon and all them were all. Then they go till the frost got on the grass too bad in the fall to stand it any longer.
Yes.
But then we used to make moccasins out of old deer hides and stuff and sea dog hides.
You did?
Shoes didn't cost very much, but one pair in a year.
Yes.
And they were just the cheapest kind there was. All the shoes used to have a big brass cap on the toe so the toe didn't get scuffed out.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Yes.
I had one time to put the sill under May's house where they're all way years ago, and I found no shoe with the cap on it. And I hid it away to have it for kind of a souvenir, but I don't know, I couldn't remember where I put it.
Oh, that's too bad. I'd love to have a picture of it.
It was just a little shoe about that long and a nice big brass cap on the toe.
Yes.
But the shoe was pretty well scuffed out.
Yes.
But I'd fallen down between the plaster and the outside boards in the house, and when we put the sill in, here it was lying down there on the sill.
Well, that's quite something.
And there was a whole lot of stuff that we had lost when we were a kid.
Yes. Well, May's house is the old homestead, is it?
Yeah. Well, Uncle Dave's house, Muriel's house, is the oldest.
It is.
It was the Bob was in, when he was born, he was brought up in there.
Of course he.
Bob and Edie, his sister.
Yeah.
But after that, Father got his house built down here.
Which one is that?
Mm.
Which one is your father's? The one having?
May's house.
Oh, May's, right, yeah. And then each of you built your own. You built this one and Bob built his.
Yes, way years after.
And George.
But when May's house was built, there wasn't any kitchen on it then. I helped to build the kitchen on it.
Did you?
I carried the boards and stuff, old Sam Reed and Lauren Wood.
Yeah.
She's buried over here on the barn.
Is she?
But Mother used to tell me about her. She died the same year that I was born. 1884.
Your mother?
No, her mother.
Her mother, oh I see. Yes, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Not her mother, but her. I can't think of names.
Harkness?
Her adopted mother, you know.
all the, Mrs. Bell.
Mrs. Robert Belding.
Yes.
Charlotte.
Charlotte Belding. And your mother's parents died on the boat from Ireland.
Yeah.
In the time of the cholera.
In Jermyn Street in St. John after they got ashore. But they're buried on Partridge Island there where all the big tombs are on the...
Right, yeah. And how old was your mother?
She was just old enough to talk.
Just two?
2 or 3 years old.
Yes.
And she had a brother, Alfred, and he was 2 years older than her. So that's who I was named after.
Was it? Yes. And then you said that Charlie Spinney said that he came one time.
Well, Charlie Spinney saw this fellow driving down with a horse and light wagon. He drove down to Dipper Harkness. He drove down and he wanted to know from Charlie if there was any Harkins or the Harkness that lived around here. And Charlie thought he meant Harkins. So he sent him down to Dipper Harbor. But he didn't know anything about my mother then, you know. He didn't know her name had been Harkness.
Mm-hmm. So she never saw her brother, or they never met?
No. Well, she never went by anything else on the building anyway after they adopted her.
Yes.
So, I don't know, there's Harknesses out in Ontario there, and I suppose some of them maybe are
relatives, it could be. It's rather nice to know.
You hear all these things when it's too late to find out.
Yes. That's the unfortunate part. Well, was she a happy person?
Hmm?
Was she a happy person? How do you remember your mother?
Oh, she was like all around, ready to carry on.
She must have been with the family she raised.
Well, her and Aunt Mary Thompson over here used to always be, you know, back and forth.
Yes.
Aunt Mary and her were always good chums.
Were they?
And then Aunt Liza down the road there, Gordon Thompson's mother, she
yes.
used to come up, and Louise.
Yes.
But my mother and Aunt Mary always got along good together.
Now, who was Mary? Who was your Aunt Mary?
She was James. She was Aunt Liza James's sister. She was,
right.
I think she was the oldest sister.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Dave married her when she was pretty
yes.
young.
Yes. Was he the one they called Deacon Dave?
Yeah.
He was. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't remember him, do you?
He was gone before I came, Al.
He was an awful nice old man. Everyone always liked him.
Yes, yeah, I've heard so many good things about him. And he was clever, too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It seems that he kept records and such. I think Len has told me about it.
He could build a house or anything like that, you know, do good anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was your father a carpenter, too?
Well, he built his own kitchen on the house over there,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't altogether a carpenter.
He wasn't as gifted.
He fished more.
Did he?
He only, I had a letter that he wrote to Uncle Dave when I think he was 19 years old and Uncle Dave was 17. And they had gone to St. John and shipped on a big bark or three masts or one of them, and the other fellow, he got up and his father didn't want him to. He was only 18 years old, Uncle Dave. But
yeah.
He got up by boat and he got shipped on this old three masts at Spooner.
Yeah.
He was going to leave here to go down to Halifax and into West Indies.
Yeah.
And anyway, the cook on her died when they got out in the Bay of Fundy somewhere, so Uncle Dave had to be cook. He had all this in this letter.
Well, do you still have the letter?
I have it somewhere, but I was just thinking today, I was looking through stuff here, hoping I could find it.
Yes, because I could have it copied and put in the book.
Yes, it was a dandy good letter.
Well, isn't that wonderful? And it's one way that everybody would always see it.
A newsy letter.
Was it? That would really be worthwhile.
I used to have them in that table drawer there,
yes.
way in the far corner, but I don't know where they went to.
I see.
Two, four. four cars that weigh it, and they had to ship them way up to the company in Montreal or somewhere.
Yes.
And re-upholstered and everything, and then when they come down, that was, George got one, Bob got one.
Yes.
And they were a dandy good car.
Okay. And that was during the war or after the war?
Well, it was in wartime, I think. It was in this carbide. Instead of having electric lights on the front, you know, they had carbide. You put in a little dish and put water in with it and it made a light. And that's what lit them up in first. But these old cars like Bob and George had, they were lit with a kerosene lamp.
Oh, they were. Yes. And it was the carbide that caught fire in the ship, was it?
Yeah, carbide, that's what they had to make them lights with.
Yes. And is that what caught fire when they had to sink the ship?
Yeah. Yes, it got on fire in the hold and they had to sink the ship, and I guess she burned after she was sunk.
Yes.
Down in the hold.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm saving that paper for.
Oh, Roosevelt's inauguration, is it?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Who's inaugurated?
I think I was saving one that had the pages marked different. One was marked one.
Oh, right. The date.
One page in the middle was different from the rest.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Well, I lay alongside the scow there. Oh, I used to have a little scow for putting the twine on the weir.
That's what it is then, is it?
Yeah, I sold it to Harley afterwards.
Oh, yes. Is that where the cemetery is up here? Is that the old cemetery?
Yeah. That's called Jess's Wharf. That's this end. The cemetery's the other side of that.
Yes.
This is the wharf where the boats lay.
Why was it called Jess's Wharf? Because
Jess Belding owned it. My grandfather gave him privilege to build a wharf. He didn't own the land, but he didn't have any wharf privilege, so he gave him a place. They had a wharf and fish house there.
Oh, he did?
They all used to call it Jeff's Wharf.
Yes, yeah.
Uncle Jeff Belding owned it.
Yes.
I don't think he... I guess we're all about the same.
Well, everybody is. There has to be competition.
Yeah.
And he... He thought the Thompsons were what? What'd you say? He said the Thompsons were...
Bloody greedy.
Bloody greedy.
Uncle Jess was he was all for all his own crowd and all that. But yet I was friendly with him. When I was only about 3 years old, I used to walk up and down the road here with him. He'd come down to see where the girls were working.
Yes.
And old Uncle Jess and they were always good chums.
Yes.
He had an old big dog there that was called Lion, and that's the only dog that I had any use for.
Yes.
And it would come and lay down alongside me and want to be petted.
Yes.
I remember Uncle Jess used to say, oh, Big Jolly, yeah, you are not Thompson, you're a Belden. Big Jolly when he was swearing.
Wasn't.
That was the hardest swearing to go, Big Jolly. this old Indian chief, he got the name of being able to cure anything, you know. He was a kind of a medicine man amongst his own crowd. He stuck a fish hook in his hand and he got it out again, but it got the beard all got sore, you know. And couldn't get healed up. Oh, was there for a long while. A great big sore on his hand. So someone told him the Indian could cure it. So he went over and tried the Indian. The Indian said yes, he could cure it. He went to work and he got an iron bolt and he heated it red hot in the fireplace. And it got good and hot and he took and burned the sore all off him. He said he couldn't cure the sore the way it was, but he could cure a burn. So, that was kind of poor satisfaction for the poor fellow that had to undergo the operation. Yeah, could cure a burn, all right.
Were there many Indians?
Hmm?
Were there many Indians?
Oh, there was five or six of them. I don't know how many. I was too young to get over to the camp much against my will. I wanted to get over and see them Turtle Bay.
Where was it?
It was just over there where Kendall's camp was on the end of the beach, and you could see their fire at night from here, you know.
Were there children or just men?
No, I guess they're mostly all men. I think there was one or two grown-up boys, you know.
Did they live there all winter?
No, they only stayed there in Gunnan time. There was lots of black tucks around Roaches Creek then, and they used to come down there. And I guess there was deer around too, maybe.
Did they mix with the people in Chance Harbor while they were there?
Did they live with
them? Mix with them. Did people go to visit them?
No, I don't think very much. There wasn't very many around here then. The old timers, they kind of thought of the Indians as being another race altogether.
Yes.
To keep clear of.
Yes.
Well, the Indians, I guess, weren't very friendly, a lot of them. Up the head of Roach's Marsh there, you know, there's a Souter's clearing there, and he had a great big fort built there. I guess it was against the Indians. I know it was to protect him from the Indians or from the Frenchmen. But the old stone wall is there yet, up between the falls and the upper part of the creek.
I didn't know that.
Souter's clearing, we always called him. Old fellow by the name of Souter lived there. I don't know what he was, if he was a Frenchman or...
Do you remember him?
No, but I remember the place where he lived. It was always supposed to be kind of a bad place for animals like leopards and stuff to be around there. And when we were young, we always kind of kept clear of around there.
Did you see, you saw a panther one day, did you know it?
Yeah.
Where was it?
Just this side of Butala Hill.
What was it doing?
Well, he was laying down, just kind of crouched down when I come abreast of him, and then he started to run for the road, and he ran along the same way as my car was going. He was only about as far as from here to the fireplace from me, you know. Oh, great big long animal and a big long tail about that long. And, well, I saw it, I didn't think, you know, I thought it was something got out of a zoo or something. I didn't know. He wasn't like any animal around here.
What color?
What color? Well, he was shedding, and he had been a kind of a brownish yellow on the side, and one part darker than the other, but that wide, you know, the band down his side, but he had all great big lumps of loose fur, as far as I could see. Of course, I only had about a second to look at him.
Yes, they move quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
They move quite quickly.
Yeah, well, you see, he'd been sitting at the side of the road, and when I come along in the car, he jumped out. He'd been sitting there in the grass. And he was only about as far as from here at the door from me, because I was on the right-hand side of the road there. And this great big animal, and I kept looking sideways at him, and yet I was going down that steep part of the Butala Hill, and he went off through the woods, and I went down this way. I had a pretty good look at his side view.
What year was that out?
Oh, it's quite a long while ago. Must be 10 years ago. But you know what? I think that he'd be around there a long while. No one would find him ever know he was there. Because here about 5 years ago, I was over to King's there. And the tide had only been going down an hour and a half about, and here was these big tracks in the sand there, great big claw marks, and there'd been two kittens with it.
Yes.
Yeah, two smaller ones. You see there little claw marks in the hard sand.
Gregory
photographed some tracks.
Yes.
One time in the snow.
Yeah, well, that was the same time that I saw the one, you know.
Yes. The elusive New Brunswick panther.
Yeah. But, you know, people believed that I was just making up the yarn. Of course, I didn't care whether they did or not anyway.
No, it doesn't really matter because you know what you saw.
Okay. Anyway, everyone always thinks of me as seeing it about far from here to Bob's barn over there, you know. But I was actually about the same from here to the door from it.
Yes. What's that about?
Well, I was as far over to the right-hand side on that turn, and it was on just across the gutter on the ridge. Yeah. There's only a little narrow ridge about that wide for him to run along anyway.
Yeah.
And what I saw on this big long tail, first thing I thought about was something out of the zoo or some traveler, you know, had lost. And I was telling them down to your place there, I guess was, and Cecil Clark and some of them there, I forget who it was, but I was telling them, they said that likely it was a panther.
Yeah.
Of course, everyone always thinks of me seeing it like away about 50 yards away, but I was so close to it you couldn't help seeing kind of what it was like.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a distinction because few people have seen it.
No, I think that didn't Harley and Eric or someone go out there and find the tracks in the snow?
Gregory.
Yeah, that was just afterward,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Wasn't there a dead deer or something to be eaten?
Yes, there was, where it had been eating. Would it have killed the deer?
Hmm?
Would it have killed the deer itself, or would it have just come upon it?
Well, I don't know. I was reading an old book that said that it was generally a wounded deer or something that they got.
Yes.
That they seldom ever caught a real live one. I didn't care whether they believed it or not.